In late 1970, a young woman named Joanne had an affair with a young man named Bob. The story is that they had known each other since elementary school and had dated on and off during high school. At the time of their affair, they were both married to other people and had children with their respective spouses. Bob owned and worked at a gas station down the street from the home Joanne was living in. Joanne was head of production at Atari. When she realized she was pregnant, Joanne told her husband Lee about the affair. And Lee knew the child wasn't his, but Joanne refused to tell him who the father was. Thinking that he would not be able to love this child as he did their other two children, Lee asked Joanne to consider giving the child up for adoption. Knowing that her marriage was rocky and being unsure of their financial situation, Joanne agreed. Earlier that same year, a young couple several towns over were coming to terms with their infertility while acutely aware of their desire to have children. They began inquiring about adoption. They had been married for just under 6 years, each held stable jobs, and were good church-going folk. Though in the eyes of the adoption agency, they were cheating a little on the church issue. Sure enough, the husband, Russ, was Roman Catholic, but the mother, Carol, was Universalist. Using her experience of being a fourth-generation Universalist and having worked at the denomination's headquarters, Carol was able to assure the adoption agency it was indeed a real religion. Carol and Russ were cleared to be parents a year and a half after their initial contact with the adoption agency. They were to adopt Joanne and Bob's baby, now named Robin. They were excited the first time they visited the new baby at the foster home, and Russ tells a wonderful story of holding the baby on his lap that day and finally feeling whole. After the adoption was finalized, Joanne and her family moved west. They were about halfway across the country when they ran out of money and settled down for a few years. During those years, Joanne and Lee separated and eventually divorced. Lee took their older child, Art, with him to Florida, and Joanne and the younger child, Mary, moved on to California. Bob and his family, all still unaware that he had fathered the baby Robin, remained where they were and continued their life as planned. Carol, Russ, and the newly adopted child began their life as a new family. This is the beginning of the story of my family. We don't all know each other yet, and we may not ever. I was the baby Robin. I am the adopted child. I am the common bond between us all, and I am the stranger. Sylvia Nolia Ramos writes at the beginning of her poem, "See One Face." When I look into the mirror, I see two faces. When I look at my life, I lead two lives, like happy and sad, like hand and glove, like bitter tears and sweet laughter. I have mastered my two lives. It is in the process of mastering my two lives that I have become acutely aware of the impact my Unitarian Universalist upbringing has had on my life. I had always been aware of the many faces, the many lives I was living. At 10 months old, I was given my first new name and new identity, my first new life. Now, I'm not sure why my birth mother named me Robin, and I may never know. My parents named me Barbara because my mother had always wanted the name for herself. The meaning used in our family is stranger in a foreign land. As an adoptee, I cannot think of any name with a more appropriate meaning. And while I have shortened the name to be just Barb, I still consider it a precious gift from my parents. I am happy and thankful that I was raised by Carol and Russ. Sure, like any family, perhaps like yours, we had our hard times, and I look back on my growing up years with mixed emotions, but all in all, it was a good life. Far beyond giving me this new life, my parents gave me something I will never be able to adequately show my gratitude for. They gave me Unitarian Universalism. And I am still, 40-somewhat years later, still just beginning to understand what a saving grace our faith has been for me. Throughout my life, I have been aware of the strength of my faith. And how could I not be, given the ties between my family and the church? My mother worked as director of religious education for over 20 years in my home congregation. Several years ago, she retired, having been named as DRE Emerita by the congregation, and since then, she has come out of retirement 3 times to serve local congregations. Before working in my home congregation, she served a neighboring church as director of religious ed, and years before that, she worked for the denomination's headquarters during the merger between the Unitarians and the Universalists. My father, who converted to Unitarian Universalism shortly after meeting my mother, continued to dedicate many hours to volunteerism within our church. By my count, he has served on every committee and council possible in the church, and he has chaired the governing board 2x. He is, in my home congregation, the only member to have 2x been presented with the congregation's most prestigious award, in recognition of his dedication to the church and our beliefs. It is an honor to follow in both of their footsteps. Now, I can tell you jokingly that dinner conversations in my childhood and family revolved more around church business than it did in how our days went. And I'm not totally kidding when I tell you that. But it is that truth, that reality, that sometimes holds my family together. Here's my best example. Several years ago, I discovered that my folks had changed their phone number, the same one they'd had since moving into their house 30-somewhat years earlier. They didn't tell me they changed their phone number. I read it in the church's newsletter. The church is what binds us together. My home congregation holds an annual talent auction. It seems not so different than your upcoming service auction, where members donate their skills to be bid on. It is a wonderful event for all whom attend and helps raise money for the church. One of the talents offered several years ago was that of a genealogy search. As is perhaps only possible in my family, my father and I ended up bidding against one another. Thankfully, I won. And as a result, I was able to further my search for my biological family. On Easter Sunday of 1997, I was handed a piece of paper with 3 names and phone numbers on it. The fellow who had done the genealogy research was certain that one of the names had to be the now ex-husband of my biological mother. It took me a day or two to work up the nerve to make those calls. And a few days after Easter, I talked to Lee, Mary, Art, and Joanne. It was an incredible experience. My half-brother Art and I discovered that we had the same hobbies and loved the same television show. Lee, my non-father, as I affectionately called him, shared his regrets at suggesting putting me up for adoption. He had been looking for me for several years. My half-sister Mary was pregnant with her first child and had hoped that we would find each other before she gave birth. We all talked about looking forward to the day when we could meet in person with a little bit of anxiety. Later that same month, my birth mother Joanne called to tell me she had told my birth father about me. I can only imagine the anxiety he lives with as he wonders if and when I will contact him. I know nothing about him, but someday, perhaps, we'll find a way to meet without disrupting his life. My birth mother Joanne in our conversation expressed relief to hear that I had a good family and was a churchgoer. In further discussing our religious values, though, she pontifically disregarded our faith tradition and assured me that she would pray for my soul. Later that spring, I wrote to everyone. I shared with them that I was a transgender guy. I did my best to explain what that meant to me and how our faith has helped me to accept my identity. Since then, I have had almost no contact with my birth mother. My half-brother Art's wife and I began emailing about the same time. We met a year later, and our connection helped Art to accept me. Art and I met in person a few years back, and we have stayed in touch since. We cherish our ever-growing friendship. I met Joanne's ex-husband, Lee, at the same time I met Art's wife. Until that meeting, Lee and I had had a wonderful correspondence. This was back before email, so handwritten letters and all. So it was a wonderful correspondence, except I had not yet come out to him. I had struggled every day with the lack of honesty that that caused in our relationship. It was a mark in my integrity that made me very aware of the two lives I have had to live. Meeting face to face forced the issue of my identity, and we never communicated afterwards. My half-sister Mary and I met for the first time about a year later. It was perhaps the most difficult of the meetings. She needed a lot of reassurance that I had a good life and only told me the bad stories about her childhood. She didn't ask many questions about my life, and I didn't offer much information. I felt as if she was more interested in comparing our lives and proving that I got the better deal than she was interested in getting to know me. I walked away from this meeting with a profound understanding of the impact growing up Unitarian Universalist has had on me. I have always known that a big piece of my ability to accept myself has been based on our spiritual teachings. Our principles guide us to not only affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, but to also accept one another and encourage each other's spiritual growth. My transgender identity is part of my spiritual being. Reaching a place of acceptance and affirmation had been part of my spiritual journey. As a teen and young adult, I had often wondered what my life would have been like had I not been given up for adoption. Having met parts of my biological family has given me some answers. I have little doubt that I would not have survived my teen years. Back then, I wondered if I would ever be understood. I worried that I would never be able to be myself and be loved for who I am. Had I not had our Unitarian Universalist principles and the support of my congregation to fall back on, I perhaps would have given up during those harder times. And so I think back and I realize that I am one of the lucky ones. Our faith tradition and institution sustained me in the hours when my reason and the world around me told me that my life is without meaning. My religious community gives me love and encouragement even in those moments when I believe that I cannot continue. I feel the support of my congregation every day. They have, after all, elected me as their president for 2 consecutive years and are sponsoring me for our ministry. I feel unconditionally welcomed there. Now, the hard thing is, I don't always know if I will get that same loving, welcoming reception in every Unitarian Universalist congregation I visit. As a lifelong Unitarian Universalist, I know that my inherent worth and dignity should be affirmed by my fellow UUs, and yet I still wonder if it will happen. Not all people who enter our congregations and are different from the norm, who are leading more than one life for whatever reason, feel this welcome. James Luther Adams wrote, "I call that church free, which in covenant with that divine community-forming power brings the individual into a caring and trusting fellowship that protects and nourishes the individual's integrity and spiritual freedom. I call that church free which liberates from bondage to the principalities and power of the world, whether churchly or secular, and which promotes the continuing reformation of its own and other institutions. We call our churches free, spiritual places where people are welcome to bring their whole integrated selves to share and grow. And our aspirations to create such free churches are honorable, but we need to follow up with good, solid action. We need to reform our institutions in order to liberate us from the bondage that says, you are not welcome to talk about your whole life here. It is our collective responsibility to make sure that all people who enter our congregations will feel welcome to share their life stories with us. Not just the parts we personally are comfortable with, but the whole story. I think of all the people in the world who are expected to check part of their life at the door in order to be accepted and affirmed. I wonder what happens to their integrity and to the integrity of the communities of which they are a part. I think of the many people who choose to participate in our wonderful religious communities because they are worried about the reception they will get. And I wonder about what our religious communities are missing out on because we let our own prejudices go unchallenged. Silvia Nolia Ramos wrote, "I have mastered my two lives. Help your congregation master its many lives. Take note of the people in your religious community. Notice who is not among you and question why. Pay attention to the explicit and implicit messages you are giving to each other and your visitors. Remember, it is in embracing all of each other's lives that we can learn to be whole people, one with another. May it be so, and may we be the ones to make it so. Amen."